Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bored as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Hello, welcome back. Taxation is theft. How's it going, everyone? I've been hitting the campaign trail pretty hard. It's been a couple weeks since we've been live. But I have with me today Kristen. And Kristen has an interesting career, and we've been talking and found out, I've learned some really interesting things about sex trafficking and all this other nonsense that the governments keep trying to tell us is the biggest issue right now. Because of course, you know, they're losing the war on drugs, so they're looking for something else. And of course there are legitimate concerns with this, but Kristen knows a lot more about this than me. So I thought I'd bring her on and we could kind of talk about these. So Kristen, welcome. How's it going?
Hi, thank you.
Awesome. So just to be prepared, Kristen's our connection is a little bit laggy, so bear with us on that. But let's see. Let me just kind of introduce us. We've been talking on Twitter a lot. I see a lot of the conversations that you get in. You're really in the libertarian group that's pushing for, you know, the whole sex work is work, legalization, decriminalization of sex work. What's your big motivation there, and what's introduce me to the world of this.
Well, you said something I wanted to touch on. You started to say legalize, and then you changed it to decriminalize, and that's something that we want to make sure that everybody is aware of the difference between the two. When you decriminalize something, what you do is you are, in a sense, you're taking away the laws that were in place that made something illegal. So you're just erasing them. When you are making something legal, what you actually do is you are adding rules, regulations, stipulations to make something legal.
And we hate
so
those.
We as our libertarian group, as well as sex workers all over the world, you know, ultimately want decriminalization.
Right. And I think that's pretty much in line with people who are fighting for drug decriminalization, too. And I know it's tricky vocabulary because it's, you know, a lot of people are saying legalize and what they really want is decriminalize. So that is a very important distinction.
Yes.
So what's your background and what brings you into fighting for this cause?
Well, that's a good question. My background is pretty, I guess, standard average. I've been a sex worker now for 8 years. I've been doing it full time for, it'll be 3 years next year in January. Previous to that, I worked at a bank. I worked for an insurance company, random regular office jobs, living in a cube. I do my bachelor's degree in business. And after my bank job, I just, you know, decided I wanted to be my own boss. I had been doing this very part-time, you know, previous to that, I was doing it maybe once or twice a month. I was worried. I didn't think I would be successful at it. And I was, you know, going to be turning 40 next year and busy as ever. So the reason that I'm here, you know, what I like to tell people, and that is the truth, is I don't necessarily have to worry about getting arrested because first of all, I'm white. I live in a nice neighborhood. There's actually not even a police officer in the town I live in. But yet are being targeted because of being minorities. We're fighting for transgender people were fighting what we would consider survival sex work, where this is their only option. Those are the people that, you know, the police target because they're easier to arrest, but those are the people also that the fines they're getting, and it just, you know, it just continues. So
right.
That's ultimately what we're fighting for. The Libertarian Party is fighting for, to be able to live their lives, get the government out of our bedrooms.
Right. And I mean, you talk about, you know, who this hits the hardest. And this is really, it's really the same thing with, I mean, you know, I guess some people call them poor taxes. It's, you know, it's the same thing with a traffic ticket. You get a traffic ticket because you couldn't afford to pay your, you know, to get your new sticker. Now you have a ticket on top of that. So now it's like, well, do you pay the sticker or do you get your license suspended and then go back and pay for your license and your plates instead? And it just snowballs and it gets worse and worse. And you're absolutely right. And, you know, I hear the argument a lot of times that, you know, people are concerned like, oh, you know, these women are being exploited. They're being forced into this because they, you know, for whatever circumstances. And it's like, okay, even if that is the case, do you now want to compound that and make it worse by giving them a criminal record and taking away their opportunities, taking whatever money they have to pay for fines and lawyers and everything else? You're not making, if that is the case, which as I've seen you say many times is not the case. If that is the case, are like, you're making it worse by criminalizing it and issuing fines and you know, all these consequences that the government creates to deter people from, which doesn't even deter people from doing it, obviously.
Right, exactly. And you just touched on something that I wanted to, you know, we're talking about trafficking and the anti-sex trafficking orgs in the U.S. get a ton of money from the government. So last year, this is all across the entire U.S. organizations received about $600 million to, you know, combat sex trafficking. These are stats that Norma Jean puts together for me. But in 2017, let me back up a little bit. What these organizations do with this money is they're really not actually trying to fight sex trafficking. What they do is they use these funds to work with local police departments to do stinks. That's really ultimately what they do. And the crazy part is even if someone is being sex trafficked, they still often get arrested. I mean, what type of, you know, government or policing should we be arresting people that are actually victims? I mean, it's just crazy. So with this $600 million, what they did in 2017, they arrested 30,000 consensual sex workers. In 2018, they have been dropping it a little. We're down to 24,000. But in both of these years, they were able to find less than 500 people. This is the entire United States that were being sex trafficked. That's actually a good thing. You know, I'm happy about that they're not finding very many trafficked individuals, but I'm not happy that we're spending $600 million literally to target consenting adults that want to engage in sexual activity for money.
Right. Now, one of the things I remember when we first had like a more in-depth conversation with some of these issues, I was at a hotel in New York for the Olean debate a few weeks ago, and they had this card at the hotel, and I wish I would have taken the card with me, but it was like, you know, see something, say something. Here are clues about, you know, if you see someone who's being trafficked in the hotel so that you can report it to the police. And there's a whole story behind this because you told me that, you know, and I'll let you explain all this, but there's the organization behind those cards and the money they're doing and what they're doing. And then there's the strange criteria and training that they're making to, that basically makes anybody suspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so the card that you had was for the national, I believe the correct wording is National Human Trafficking Hotline. So the parent company that runs that particular, we as in sex worker rights organizations have been dealing with this particular organization for a long time. literally, you know, it's almost to the point now where what they put out is literally propaganda. They actually partnered with the Marriott hotel chain to train their employees to spot sex trafficking, kind of like the little card that you had. And literally some of the things that they said that you should watch out for is a woman asking for more towels or sitting at a bar by herself and having a drink. So it, and you know, it's not just sex workers, random single woman, you know, could be targeted because of these bizarre and inaccurate ways that they're saying that that you fight sex trafficking. Ultimately, the way that you fight sex trafficking is to criminalize sex work so people that are being trafficked can come forward and ask for help from the police and not be worried that they're actually going to get arrested, which actually still happens. Even if somebody is legitimately being sex trafficked, there are lots of states that will still arrest them. So, and another tidbit of information, we still have states in the United States where a police officer can legally have sex with a sex worker and then arrest them. I mean, if that doesn't make you just nauseous, I don't know what possibly could.
Right. And I remember that was a big thing in, I think it was Honolulu, the chief of police was being interviewed by the news station because they were trying to, I guess, overturn one of those laws so that they wouldn't have that right anymore. And this guy, he was just sitting there with a straight face defending, no, our officers need to be able to have sex with these sex workers before they arrest them because, and he was just, you know, trying to defend it any way he could. And it's like, you just sound like an idiot. That's, you know, you're trying to abuse your power. You enjoy being a customer, but you just enjoy also, you know, taking your power out on other people and being able to extort them and arrest them. And you know, that's criminal. You're participating in this thing too. And I want to reiterate what you said. You said it a couple times already. It's because this is so important. Like, if, as they say, these laws are created to protect these victims, these so-called victims, as they're saying, why are they arresting the victims? Why are you making victims' lives harder? They're not, I mean, you're giving them criminal records, you're sending them through the court system, you're treating them like criminals, you're giving them the stigma, you're making them believe that they are criminals. And when, like, that's a type of conditioning. Once that's in your head, oh, I'm a criminal, well, I'm not going to even try to get a regular job. I'm going to, you know, get involved in the sex trade, or I'm going to sell drugs, or I'm going to do anything that's on the black market. I'm going to rob and steal because I'm already a criminal. If that's in somebody's head, like, that's what you're creating if that's what you're trying to protect. And I know I don't want to confuse the line there because, you know, I happily say, you know, sex work is not a crime and selling drugs is not a crime. So, but I guess in today's society with the laws that we have, they're black markets. So if you're taking someone's options away from, you know, from the free market, the public market, the government market, you're forcing them into the black market, and that's where they're going to stay. And you're not helping anybody by doing that in any way.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, that we've discussed before is, I mean, whenever you create, you know, where you prohibit something, you immediately create a black market. And, you know, if these anti-sex trafficking orgs really, really cared about reducing sex trafficking, they would also support decriminalization because, you know, there are a few countries in the world at this point that have fully decriminalized sex work. It's going to be New Zealand, the Northern Territory in Australia, and most recently New South Wales in Australia also fully decriminalized sex work.
Really?
So, you know, when you look at these models where this has happened, and, you know, they actively try to find people that are being sex trafficked. Once you, you know, get rid of the laws and regulations and illegality of a particular, you know, type of activity, the black market evaporates because there's no need for it. You have people that can do this job who want to do this job, you know, and the black market doesn't need to be there because, you know, they're able to be out and they're able to do their job.
Right. Now, what's interesting, because I hear a lot of, and, you know, this might be going off topic, but it's still kind of, I think there's a a blurred line or a gray area there, because I hear about, you know, first of all, the word sex trafficking is always used whether it's consensual or not. But if you say, okay, look, let's talk about people who are being kidnapped and abducted and forced into a sex trade, that's obviously a bad thing. But we also have, like, I saw the statistics on, like, the number of kids who are kidnapped, and I don't know how accurate that is, but, like, it's also, like, kids, very young kids, and I'm hoping that those kids aren't being put into the sex trade either at that young, like, we're talking, like, three-year-olds and babies who are just being picked up. So I wonder, like, because obviously that's an actual problem. What would decriminalization do towards that? And is that really related, or is that something else? Are people doing this for other reasons that are unrelated?
Well, decriminalization, first of all, it's that's a good point that you made, that, you know, a lot of people have this fear that they're saying, you know, we're going to decriminalize sex work, but that means that we're not going to punish people that are doing something wrong. So sex trafficking is still going to be 100% illegal, regardless of the person's age. And, you know, that's obviously going to include anybody that's under the age of 18. So that's something we all know is bad. I mean, it's, you know, it doesn't really even need to be addressed, but that's something that none of us want. Sex workers don't want that. I mean, at the same time though, I mean, even if we knew somebody was being sex trafficked, or one of my clients knew that someone was being sex trafficked, it's really difficult for them to come forward. Even if you say, you know, I was with a sex worker and I felt like that they were being forced to do that, they're going to turn around and they're going to arrest that client for you know, soliciting prostitution. So, you know, we have all these bizarre catch-22s that are in place that are helping no one. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. I want to say something else about the child sex trafficking. So I was recently having a discussion with someone on Facebook about this, and there's this website that likes to publish and circulate these statistics saying that there's 100,000 to 300,000 children that are being sex trafficked every year. The problem is that tugs at heart, well, the little tiny hearts of people in our government that are doling out the our taxes to them. But it's really so inaccurate. And that's a good thing, because I mean, we actually have the FBI statistics, and you know, every year they do find children that have been sex trafficked. But I mean, it's gonna be, you know, between 20, 30, 40 children in the entire United States. So that's a really good thing. But you know, when we inflate numbers that are just so incredibly unrealistic, you know, I've always said, even if half of those parents were, you know, not super crappy parents, why are we not hearing about this all the time? You would think that, you know, if a parent's child is being abducted and it's, you know, a stranger and the child possibly might be in sex trafficked, you would see it everywhere, but you don't, because it unfortunately it's inflated so that they can make money. So.
Right. Yeah. And that's probably one of the numbers that I saw that, you know, and that's really good to hear that it's not that high, but that is, I mean, if you think about it, 300,000 every year is what,
right.
that's like, I'm trying to, like, what's the best way to phrase how big of a, like, that's like 1% of the population every 5 years or 10 years or something. That's yeah, you're absolutely right. We would be hearing more about that.
It's a huge chunk of children.
Interesting. Yeah,
exactly.
And, you know, that's another thing too, because like you talk about, like, you know, a lot of people want the government to solve this problem, and you know, you look at it and it's like, okay, you've got what's his name, Jeffrey Epstein, who didn't kill himself, who's he's connected to, like, all these people who are in government. And what's that?
I was going to say Jeffrey Epstein did kill himself, but you you snuck up on me.
Like, you have people like him, and he's connected to, like, all these people who are in the top levels of government. And then, like, there was a report that, like, they did, like, some internal audit at the Pentagon, and 2,200 computers had kiddie porn on them. And then you have like, you see what's happening with CPS, and like they're taking kids from families because like what, they didn't show up on school to school on time. So they take them away from the family because they're not being educated right, supposedly. And then they send them off to like a foster care where they're being sexually abused and beaten and everything else. And it's like, when you look at this, right, it's like the people that you're trusting to protect people from these types of crimes are making it worse. They're creating so many more problems. They're putting so many more lives at risk, and so many, they're damaging so many more lives. In every way you look at it, it's insane. But I guess some people just like to turn a blind eye to all that. And no, I don't want to believe that my government's evil. It's yeah, so what else do you have on this? I know you said you've got, I know you have like lots and lots of information. What else should we know about this?
A couple other things that I'll touch base with. Recently, we had a decriminalization bill that went forward in DC. There was one previously that was submitted in New York, which was, I want to say, August or September. Both of those, unfortunately, at this point have been sidelined. And the DC one, though, you know, when that particular bill was introduced, allowed testimony from people from both sides, people that were for it and against it. And they actually had people that were giving testimony for 14 us from that this is a very passionate, you know, thing for people from both sides. The groups that, you know, are also considered the anti-sex trafficking orgs is, a lot of them at this point are saying, well, you know, we're okay with, you know, the sex workers selling the sex, but we still want to criminalize the people that are buying sex. So what that's known is it goes by a lot of different names. The Swedish model, the Nordic model, the equity model, the end demand model. Normally the people that are supporting this really, really think that 80 to 90% of sex workers are being trafficked. Even if they ask the sex worker, are you being trafficked? And the sex worker says, no, I'm doing this independently. It's as though that they treat sex workers like childish victims, that there's no possible way that they could choose this or want to do this, or maybe not want to do this, but it's their best option at that particular point. You know, we have them swooping in thinking that we're all victims and we all want to be saved. And it's to the point now, thankfully, where, you know, sex workers are, you know, joining together and we're saying, hey, this is our job. This is what we're doing. There's no reason why you should support putting consenting adults in cages for having sex. I mean, that's, when you break it down like that, you know, it's bizarre. And the other thing is, you know, the government is not our morality police. That's not what our government is for. You don't have to agree with sex work. That's your choice. You don't have to engage in sex work. That's your choice. But at the same time, it's not my government's responsibility to go around arresting people for having consensual sex. Right. So just one other thing that was floating around Twitter quite a bit with the push for the Swedish Nordic Equity End Demand. It's got so many names now. Seth Meyers and Ashley Judd, who are famous people, have decided that, you know, it would be best if they, you know, contact the people that are doing the New York bill and make sure that they let them know that they, you know, that they should do the Swedish Nordic Equity End Demand model, not necessarily because any sex workers want it, but, you know, because they're famous and, you know, they're going to swoop in and they're going to save all the victims of sex work. So it's bizarre. Right. It's weird. Here we are.
So that's just,
I just want to make another point. So just,
I was just gonna say that's kind of like the virtue signaling that, you know, whenever they have the celebrities coming out and doing like the anti-gun videos, or, you know, they
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like what can make me look good in the public eye? And I think I kind of grew up in LA and I've seen like a lot of these like charity type things and I've been to a few, and like I think there is like some aspect where they're just like, yeah, okay, I want to do some good. But I think at the same time, like these organizations you were talking about earlier, like they don't know, they're not experts in this area. And then you have these organizations who are, you know, getting government money and they have, bad information. And then they get to the celebrities and they say, hey, this will make you look really good. And the celebrities are like, oh, yeah, and that'll make me feel good, too, because I'm helping people. But it's just all, you know, they're falling victim to the wrong information. And now they're spreading it to like millions more people using their voice of celebrity, which is terrible. But yeah, who knows that all the circumstances. But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. So, a lot of people in the U.S. particular are not really aware that sex work is actually legal or decriminalized or partially decriminalized or partially legal in the majority of the world. So this is not like, you know, our particular system that we have here is something that you see frequently in other parts of the world. I mean, in most of Europe, sex work is legal, which means that you normally have to register, you would have to get a license, you'd have to submit to STI testing every so often to continue the license or what have you. Again, there's varying aspects of it. So just to put this into perspective, so sex work is legal in a limited amount of counties in Nevada right now. And I actually did work at one of the brothels, and I can give you some information about that. But the rest of our country, buying and selling of sex as well as anything related to that is illegal. Now, the laws that we have in place are actually similar or the same as sex work laws that you would find in Iraq, Pakistan, Sudan, and China. So if you can wrap your brain around that for a second and think that these countries that we consider most definitely not as progressive as we are, obviously, have the same sex work laws that we do.
Right. I'm just that just blew my mind. You're going to have to get me I'm going to have to write that down because I need to make an infographic for that. Yeah, because I mean, what, they hate us for our freedom, right? That's insane.
Right.
So
it definitely is. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Sorry, the lag's kind of bad.
Yeah, I live out in the country, so I'm limited to what I have for internet service. So I was going to talk a little bit about when. This would have been in 2017. I worked off and on at one of the brothels in Nevada that was owned by Dennis Hoff. So the brothel I worked at, it was called the Kit Kat Ranch. And I did have to register with the county. They did have a background check on me. And then while we're at the brothels, we had to have STI testing every week or 2 weeks, but it was something that we also had to pay out of pocket. As well as when you stay at the brothels, 50% of what you make or what you earn goes to the house. So that's the cut, as well as most of the brothels, which included the one that I went to, if you didn't make a certain percentage, a certain dollar amount per day, you would have to pay, room and board for that day, which would include your food as well as you staying there. We worked, 12-hour shifts, and you could leave the brothel that I worked at after our shift was done, but there are some brothels in Nevada, as well as some of the counties, where if you know you were working for a period of time in a brothel, you could not leave. So it's interesting because this is the model that we chose in the U.S. in a very limited amount of area, obviously, as to what we felt would be the best for sex workers. Whereas in the majority of the world, oftentimes they don't allow brothels because they find that they were exploiting the sex workers and that, you know, it was not the best or safest model for them. So that's just, you know, something interesting that you know, we're still a little bit backwards on.
Right. And yeah, it's, I mean, it's reminding me a little bit of the taxi model. You have, like, you know, taxi versus Uber. An Uber driver, like, they're still working for, there's Uber in the middle who's taking a cut, but it's a little bit more independent. Whereas I've heard things like with, you know, kind of the same kind of things with taxis where, like, you have to rent the taxi, and if you want to take a day off, you still have to rent the taxi for that day, even if you're not making any fares, because if you return it, then they're going to give it to somebody else, and you're not going to, when you go back for another taxi, you're going to have to wait in line, and you won't have one the next day. So they do have a lot of, it's restrictive. And when you look at that one, it's like, the reason that's like that is, you know, the government puts all those rules in place to regulate the taxis, and they say it's to, you know, make the taxi driver safer, but really it's so that the taxi company can maintain a monopoly. And so if that's what they're doing with brothels, then that's essentially the same thing. You're like, you can, yes, you can engage in sex work, but you have to do it at one of our certified places, which is, you know, somebody who's obviously, I'm sure, paying like the mayor or the county board or whatever, like, you know, whether it's a license or a bribe or whatever, like, oh, we only have a limited number. So you want to set up a new one? You want to set up your own? Sorry, you're not allowed to do that. That's going to cost you $1 million. You know, there are all kinds of rules that they put in place to prevent that, which basically means, and this is what people don't see. Cause like, you know, I used to hear that, you know, the brothels were great because they do the testing and they do the background checks and everything else, which at the same time, I mean, shit, look at any job. I mean, you go and work at CVS, they're doing background checks. Like they don't want people who are going to rob their store to work there. So it's not like they're only doing that because the government says so. But yeah, you just have this structure that's in place, and everybody thinks it's like, oh, no, they're protecting us. But no, they're protecting the business that's making, and then that creates an environment where you're exploiting workers because they have no freedom. They can't go start their own business, or they can't work for themselves. They're forced to work for an employer, which means the employer can treat them like shit now, because it's like, oh, what are you going to do? Quit and start your own business? No, I'm going to keep treating you like shit because I can. And you can't leave because there's nowhere else to go. So yeah, it's funny how like everyone thinks the government's solving a problem, and it's just making things so much worse.
Right. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, the brothels in Nevada obviously don't support the decriminalization of sex work, because if they did, you know, a lot of these gals would be, you know, leaving and working on their own, which they should be able to do, a system. But because, you know, there's no competition, you know, there's no way for, you know, maybe giving less of the house or working less hours or working a different shift. I mean, because there's not that competition with anything outside, which we know obviously helps. Competition helps in all situations. When you don't have that, then, you know, like you said, the employer, they have the upper hand. So yeah, they make all the rules and you don't really have any other options.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had a thought there for a second and I lost it. But yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, you know, what you say is going on in other countries is like, that's still kind of blowing my mind, because it's like, you know, yeah, we're supposed to be the freest country in the world. And it's like in these other countries, right? So like, I hear this all the time. If you legalize it, there's going to be a brothel across the street from every kindergarten. And like, you know, it's going to like all these things in countries where it's decriminalized, like, is like everybody, like, you know, sneaking out on their wife and screwing every sex worker in town? Or is like is there an epidemic of AIDS and all these other diseases? Or like, is it just like, no, it's just legal and there's really no big problems?
Well, the country I know the most about would be New Zealand. I don't have a lot of statistics on the two countries in Australia, but I can tell you in New Zealand, when it initially was decriminalized, they had a slight influx of additional sex workers, but it pretty much tapered off. And really, ultimately, they didn't find that there was a huge change in the amount of sex workers versus the amount of clients that were, you know, seeing the sex workers. It just kind of, you know, the police were able to do other stuff, like, you know, find actual crimes and consenting people. One thing that they did find in New Zealand is two things that actually were reduced because of decriminalization was STI transmission did go down because sex workers were able to better negotiate to make sure that condoms were being used. And secondly, sex trafficking went down, you know, that I had touched on before. When you get rid of that black market, you get rid of the need or the incentive to have a black market. So what they found is also, you know, in New Zealand, that sex workers felt very confident and comfortable coming to police if they were raped, if they were attacked, if they were robbed, if they were not paid. So, you know, in these particular situations, they were able to go to police and police were able to help them, just like, you know, they should be able to do. You know, in New Zealand also, it's considered a regular job. So someone who's a sex worker is going to be able to have all of the benefits of any other sole proprietor, or, you know, if they work for a brothel, they'd be able to have the same benefits as, you know, someone that, you know, had an employer. So they really found that it helped much more than any other particular type of, you know, criminalization or partial legalization.
Right. Wow. That's, yeah, I mean, it's like it... Like, especially when you talk about STD, STI transmission rates going down, it's like, how could you not look at that and say, well, it's a good thing, we should consider this. And, you know, I guess, you know, maybe I think there's like a lot of the, what word can I use that's not insulting? The very religious who are, you know, very like, oh no, can't legalize that because the Bible says so. Like, I know there's some, I don't know if that's like a big majority of it, but I know that's a pretty big, I can't say majority or pretty big. It's a large group, I know. So it's interesting to see, but it's like, that's, I don't know, that kind of brings up its whole other, issues that go along with that, of people trying to control other people and trying to control other people's behavior. And it's like, wait a second, we're supposed to be free here. We're supposed to be free to make our own decisions and control our own lives. But then it's like, when you, I always have this like dilemma, right? Like, okay, let's say, because government's getting in the way, government says it's helping, but government is making things worse. What if government were making things better by making it illegal? Would it still be like, from my perspective, it's still okay, even though it's getting worse, still the government, it's our right to make things worse. It's our right to make our decisions, whether they're good or bad, and that's our right. And so as much as this is something that it's always on my mind, because we're always talking about how every single government program makes things worse. But it's like, at the same time, even if they made things better, it's like, no, it doesn't matter. We shouldn't have to talk about how bad the government is. We should just be able to say, I don't care how bad it makes the world. It's my decision. The only person I'm hurting is myself, and the government should not get involved. I think that's I don't know how much you push that message, but that's a message I like to push a lot.
Right, right. There was another thing I wanted to touch base on when you mentioned, you know, government thinking that they're going to make something better, or government intervention is going to help something. So as I'm sure you're aware, last year in April of 2018, Trump signed into federal law the SESTA-FOSTA garbage that we like to call it in the sex work industry. And ultimately what this means is that websites or web people that handle a particular type of site or whatever, that if someone was advertising or someone was on the site that was being sex trafficked, what they were saying, what the laws ultimately said, is that the web host would actually be responsible for publishing this information for someone that was being sex trafficked. Completely ridiculous. And we only had a couple of people that actually opposed it. One of them was Justin Amash, which is out of Michigan. There was another gentleman who was actually a Democrat that opposed it. But literally everyone else, as you know, the sheeples are, just, you know, said, wow, this is a great idea. We should do this. So it was signed into law in April of 2018. So immediately what happened is a lot of these sites that sex workers use not only to advertise on, confirm that the client was safe, were immediately shut down. So what you then had was there was a period of time where sex workers, if this is your only option, going back into the streets, which thankfully is something you don't see very much anymore because of the internet. But because they took that tool away from us, you know, we had gals working the streets. There was an increase of, you know, assaults against sex workers because customers knew that they didn't have any other options. There was an increase in, you know, pimping and sex trafficking because sex workers didn't have these abilities to advertise. They didn't have the ability to get the business that they needed. So, you know, it just proved that in that particular instance, you know, government said, well, we're gonna make this better. We're gonna reduce sex trafficking, when in fact they did not reduce sex trafficking. It actually increased. And also, there was a huge increase we also want to push for, is to get that federal law repealed so that, you know, hopefully we can get the websites back up like Backpage that actually worked with police. They, you know, that was something that wasn't mentioned a whole lot, is that Backpage actually regularly went through their ads. And if they saw something that they felt might be sex trafficking, they contacted the police. You know, at this point, the police don't have any other websites that are consistently doing that.
Right. Wow. That's a really interesting point. And, you know, because it's I think that's weird, because a lot of people think like, oh, these are all just heartless, soulless people in this industry. They don't care about anything. They'd sell their mother for $25. Like, it's, and, you know, the same in the drug trade. And that's really just not the case. There's, you know, I can say I used to sell drugs, not drugs, just weed. But I know from that industry, yeah, there's some bad people, but there's a lot of really good people in that industry who were just entrepreneurs trying to make a buck in, you know, an economy that wasn't that great for, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of jobs that are out there. Okay. Yeah. But they're only paying $8 or $10 an hour. Hey, this is a better way to, this is a better way to make some money to pay for, you know, your living expenses and everything else. And why not? And it's, you know, it's
right.
You're not bad people for getting into this. It's, you know, but it's just that stigma that's put out. And I think, like, you know, going, I always talk about movies and TVs and like how TV shows, how they're propaganda, whether intentional or not. Like, what we see in TV and movies, what we see from cops, like, oh, it's okay for the cops to violate the Constitution and perform an illegal search because they know, they have a hunch, and we know because we've seen the camera on the other side of the wall. We know the drug dealers are in there, so it's okay. But that comes with us into the real world, where when we see an article about police breaking and entering into some people's house with a SWAT team, then it's like, oh, well, that was okay. It was justified because it was the drug war. And it's the same thing when you see, a prostitution bust or something like that. It's like, oh yeah, well, these people are probably all, you know, into the drug scene and probably like involved in murder and like all these other crimes that go along with it, because that's what they've seen. That's what they know from the movies. And that's all they know about that industry. It's actually like, not to shit on the movie industry, because like, that's, you know, that is free speech, but we have to understand that that's a very limited view of the world, and they take you know, the most dramatic parts of life and exaggerate them to entertain us. But that's not what the real world is. Like, as many times as I was told as a kid, you know, like, oh, you know, you have to realize that's just a movie. That's not real life. That's not, you know, you can't just kill somebody because they, you know, because they crossed you. It's like, yeah, we kind of understand that as kids, right? Horror movies are not real. But like, how much of this other, like, more subtle, you know, stigmas are developing in our brains that we're not being told, like, hey, that's not what the real world is like? I think that's kind of dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yeah, I completely agree. So for all of the libertarians that are watching, Libertarians for Decrim will have a table at the National Convention. Please stop by and talk to us and ask us questions, and I will be there all week long answering questions. And I think, you know, one thing that I've said about the Libertarian Party is, you know, this has been on our platform for a while to decriminalize sex work, but, you know, because it's a sensitive topic, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they're not comfortable coming forward. They're not comfortable talking about it. They're not comfortable asking questions. And I hope that, you know, me being here as well as being at the national convention that, you know, we're going to start talking about it. I mean, this is part of our really addressed a whole lot. So yeah. That's what I'm here to do.
Absolutely. So, okay, before we go, I want to ask a couple questions because I love words as much as I hate the English language. I love words, but I want to know, I want to have a better understanding of what exactly constitutes sex work and what are the politically correct words to use. So, for example, does sex work include stripping? Does it include, I don't know, what else? Obviously the porn industry, I think, would be included. What exactly does that include?
So sex work technically includes pretty much any sexual activity or sexual nature type of work that you are being compensated for. So right now, you know, like you said, stripping would be included, porn would be included. Prostitution obviously would be included, but at this point, prostitution is the one that's illegal. You know, you could also have camming, you could have modeling, BDSM services. So those are all, you know, included, but prostitution is the main one that we're focused on because that is the one that is technically illegal at this point.
All right. And so for somebody who is in any of those industries, what are words that that we should use that are good words and which ones are considered offensive?
I'm okay with, like, for me personally, I'm okay with being considered an escort. Prostitute is okay. Sex worker, obviously, you know, is what we normally go by. We don't particularly like being called a slut or a whore. You know, if I want to say that, that's my choice. But, you know, being called that out in public is not appropriate. You know, one of the things also that we are trying to change is a lot of times you will have clients are people that come to see me, or sometimes I'll refer to them as a customer, but, you know, you still hear them being referred to as Johns. That's pretty antiquated. We would not use that term anymore. You also might hear people still use the term, you know, that we're tricking, or, you know, that we have a trick over something. I've never heard anybody use that. I would normally say that, you know, I have an appointment with someone. So that would, you know, it's business-like, and, you know, we normally use business terms that are just, you know, just, I guess, to destigmatize it and make it legitimate, that it's a legitimate profession. I legitimately have, you know, clients that come here for me to provide a service for them.
Awesome. Okay, well, now you know. So awesome. Thank you for coming on the show and talking about this. I think this was a lot of great information. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that and got some good information out of it. If you did, If you're coming to the Austin convention, make sure to stop by the Libertarians for Decrim table. Check them out. Also, of course, I'm running for president, so I'll be there. Stop by berman2020.com/donate and send us some money so we can get to all of these conventions and go to all your states and see you. And so that we can help keep working with everybody to make these awesome advancements in personal liberty across the world and make America free again. All right. Thank you again so much. This has been really awesome. And we'll talk soon.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.